my name is Sydney, and before this episode, I had never read a Hanahaki disease fic.
Hello, my name is Maya. I've read many.
Yeah, checks out for you, actually.
Yeah, it's right up my door.
It is. I have never read one before I read one for this episode. Mm. I just never...
It's not your flavor.
It's not. I don't...
Because they usually don't end well.
Sometimes they do end well, but it still is a lot to get there.
Yeah, but even I think the ratio of living through the disease...
Versus
dying mm-hmm. is not very high.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is canonically incorrect. Our fandom and fanfiction and fanliness podcast. And I am just going to talk about Hanahaki disease. The trope.
Okay.
Today. The actual disease.
The real life disease.
No, I don't think there is a real life disease.
No, there is not.
When I was doing my research, there was some people's articles that were like, it may... Because, like, no one really knows, like, where the idea came from. Like, there was... a first publication kind of that like it spanned from, but like mm-hmm. I mean, no one went to the manga con, was just like, where did you get this idea? So there's like a lot of theories, and there are some theories that like it does kind of spin from like infections that you can get from plant matter, like underneath your skin, or like, you know,
right,
if you ingest anything like that. But like, of course, nothing is as traumatic or actuality as Hanahaki disease, mm-hmm. but yeah, I did see when I was doing some research that it was just like, it could be kind of like these infections where...
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that, like, caught on. Someone just thought of it, and everyone else was like, hey, that's a pretty good idea.
It's relatively new, too. Yeah. Like, compared to some of the other tropes of romance and mm-hmm. Stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I never had ever read a Hanahaki disease. Obviously, it's quite prevalent, especially in anime.
Correct.
So, it's not that I never came across them. It's just that I was never inclined to actually read them because the text would always be like major angst or like unhappy ending or
yeah.
So I just never felt compelled to ever read one. And then we did get a recommendation for one. And I was just like, you know what? It would be interesting to go look into a trope that I just never decided to look into before mm-hmm. just because I just didn't.
Right.
So what is your history with Hanahaki disease?
I mean, I can't even remember. Like, I'm sure I was just scrolling through Tumblr and mm-hmm. it popped up and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And it's, I don't know, it's, I'm going to compare it to ABO in the sense that, like, you just learn the rules as you continue reading it.
There's no set anything.
There's no set anything. And there's, like, a general guideline mm-hmm. that everyone just kind of knows and follows after you've read a certain amount.
Yes.
To be like, oh, well, this is XYZ and this mm-hmm. is just, like, kind of how it is. And people obviously put spins on it and mm-hmm. twists on it or combine it with other things. But it's always been pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Have you ever gone looking for a Hanahaki disease, or just like whenever you come across one, like, because I know, like, you know, when you were in like your Gojo kick, you probably came across like
one or two. Here's the thing, I've never been the kind of person that like I seek out tropes mm-hmm. explicitly.
You search out like characters
I search out characters and relationships, and it's just like I kind of make my way through the list mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, that looks interesting, I'll mm-hmm. go ahead and read that.
It's
never been like, I'm going to search out Hanahaki disease today. It's always like, oh, interesting, that one's Hanahaki, I'm going to read that tonight. Mm-hmm.
Have any that you read, like, been really good? Because I know your favorites are, like, you were really into the cheating fix at one point. You like a crime and mafia fic, but...
Hanahaki was never, mm-hmm. like, super high up there. I do like the trope, and I do like it quite a lot, but mm-hmm. it's not, like, it doesn't get the engines going, what I mean? Where it's just kind of, like, it's a good setting. Again, the fatality rate is much higher than other tropes. So it is... in that aspect a little bit harder to like mm-hmm. put towards the top of the list,
right?
And it just kind of depends. Yeah, mm-hmm. like we all go through those cycles of just like, at least for me, like I feel like I need this today, or like I need to read something along the lines of that today. So
I feel like with Hanahaki, more than maybe any other trope, there's a higher risk factor where it's like, you don't know if this person's gonna like come out at the end, where like for most of the fanfics you're like, there's gonna be a happy ending and we're gonna be fine. But with Hanahaki, because you said, like, the fatality rate is, like, a scotch higher.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that, like, you kind of go into it. Mm-hmm. At least for me, like, I've read enough of them to be like, oh, they're not going to make it at the end. Or they're not going to be in a relationship at the end. Because that's just kind of what the expectation is at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a surprise if things go well in there and you're like, oh, okay. Well.
I feel like that's also the same for, like, illness fix, which I also don't really pick up when, like, one of the characters in a relationship is sick with, like, a terminal, like, that one Boku Waka fic in Another Life that got really popular, which is an illness fic.
Yeah,
those are also like fatality rate is very high
for sure,
which I also don't. And Hanahaki is like, it's a fake disease, but it's still an illness at the end of the day. So during my little research, if you guys don't know, I would say, again, Hanahaki is really popular in Asian media. It's really prevalent in, like, especially, like, anime fan fiction. So if you're someone who reads more, like, Western media fan fiction, or, like, Marvel or DC Comics or Star Wars or Harry Potter, like, it might not be as prevalent in then. So I'm just going to go over, like, Hanahaki disease just to give a brief about the trope, because, again, it's, like, popular, but it's not, like, popular.
Right.
So Hanahaki disease is a fictional disease in which a person will cough up flower petals when they are experiencing unrequited love. So that's what Maya means by, like, there might not be a happy ending, because, like, it's unrequited love at the end of the day. Which, no thanks.
Yeah, Sydney doesn't do well with.
The disease doesn't end until their love is romantically requited or when the victim dies from the disease. And often there is also an alternative to removing the disease via surgery, with the consequences of having their feelings removed. This was one of the parts that you were kind of talking about, of authors have made it their own. So, like, then there was, like, here's this disease, and then it was just like, what if you can get it surgically removed, right? And then it was just like, but there'd be consequences after it. So then they have, like, no feelings whatsoever, which I didn't read anything like that, but I can only guarantee that there are fan fictions of of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Have you read that?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, because there's ones that it's like, it's unrequited love, and it's usually paired with, like, miscommunication or something, because it's usually people are like, oh, you just have to tell them,
and then
it's
they're like, no,
and then they're like, no, I don't want to, or the other person doesn't realize that they actually do have feelings until after they've already fucked up. So then the person goes and has the surgery, has it all removed, and then person B is like, no, I actually do love you, and it's like, well, it's too late.
Damn.
Like, it is just too late.
That's rough.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
It's entertaining.
Oh. But yeah, so, like, there's those aspects of, like you said, with, like, Omegaverse, where they've just kind of grew and grew and grew onto it. And that's definitely one of the aspects of, like, surgery. But then, like, what are the consequences after surgery? And, like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know? The word Hanahaki comes from the Japanese words hana, meaning flower, and haki masu, meaning to throw up. So the Hanahaki trope was popularized first in East Asia fandoms among Korea, Japan, and China before spreading to Western audiences. And the disease originated from a 2009 Japanese shoujo manga called Hanahaki Otome, which in English means the girl who spit flowers. So, and I'm just going to, a quick brief about that manga, because I feel like you would actually maybe like this. I know you don't, you're not for a shoujo, but, like, this is a sad shoujo.
Interesting.
So in Hanahaki Otome, the protagonist is a teenage girl called Katsuki, who experiences heartbreak and begins to suffer from a disease that began with sharp pains in her chest. While it seems like she's suffering from quote-unquote normal heartache elements, the disease slowly turns into experiencing stomach pains, and she begins coughing up flower petals. She is immediately diagnosed with Hanahaki disease, but unfortunately dies from the disease at the end of the manga. So she is a fatality of the disease.
Yeah.
First of her kind. Didn't even make
from the get-go.
From the get-go,
the fatality was fucking high.
Yeah, I mean, even I would have. It would have been great to see that become an anime. I don't think it ever.
I don't think so.
Did, but I mean, 2006. It is, again, a fairly new trope. You know, with it's only not even 2 decades old.
Yeah.
Its most popular tags that are included with alongside Hanahaki disease include angst, hurt comfort, hurt no comfort, pining, miscommunication, etc., etc. In 2017 as well, tags and mentions about the disease gained a massive increase on social media sites like AO3 and Reddit, which further popularized the disease, and there are currently 18,591 Hanahaki disease fanfictions on AO3.
Nice.
So, again, like, it's pretty small. Like, it's not like there's some that you could look up, like, only one bed that's, like, hundreds of thousands. And this one's, like, a fairly small number. So this is a quote that I found from TV Tropes that I think kind of discuss a little bit more in depth as to what you were saying about, like, why the trope is at least popular to you. So the trope is popular because it has a lot of melodramatic angst potential while also being pretty with flowers. Death by Hanahaki disease is tragic but beautiful. The victim is killed from within by something as beautiful as flowers. Haunted by their unrequited love, the person usually tries to cover up their illness. They leave behind trails of bloody flowers, which are both horrific and aesthetically pleasing. Flower motifs are often used, which adds to the symbolism. The flowers are frequently associated with their unrequited love interest. It could be their favorite flower, their flower color, flower they're named after, or a flower that holds a certain meaning behind it, i.e. wild roses means pleasure and pain. which I also love the symbolism of flowers. Right. I think we've talked about that when I read that Kuro amnesia fic, where I think there was like a gardening flower element.
Yeah.
And like all of the flowers in that fic had meaning to them. Like in the main YN character, like knew all of the meanings to that. So I also love that creativity that can come behind with the flowers, where it's like, well, the flowers mean something. They're not just picking random flowers. Like, they all mean something.
Absolutely.
Which I love, like, a good flower symbolism. I mean, I like symbolism in anything, but I think specifically, like, the language of flowers is such an old tradition, like, not only in Europe, but also in Asia. And, like, to bring them back is, like, cool in, like, a modern way where you die of the flowers. So, yeah, that was, like, all I found about, like, Kanahaki disease. It wasn't, like, as, you know, well-studied. I know there are some tropes in fandom that have been like deeply studied, like coffee shop AUs and Omegaverse, like they've been deeply studied,
but those are also again like more massively popular, and it's like it spreads across all genres regardless of location.
Yes.
Where it is, Hanahaki is pretty central to Japanese media.
Yeah. It's grown, like it said, like when it started gaining traction in like 2017 through social media apps and stuff. Like it started growing, but it's again not quite as large, where it's still, it's only 18,000 fics, and that's just on AO3, obviously the platform that it is easier to find quantifiable measures of, you know, numbers associated with that, which, like, I don't even know, there's probably a ton on, like, fanfiction.net, because fanfiction.net had, like, a huge anime base on it. Wattpad could have the same thing. I was interested, after learning about Hanahaki Otome, that I was just like, if I could find it, maybe I would read it, just because like it seems interesting, and it's like this all came from this one.
Right. I don't know that they would have an English publication of it.
They might not. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I can only assume it'd be a pretty short manga.
Probably.
Just because like I don't know. Like I don't know what I just know that she dies at the end of it, right? Mm. Like I don't know like what kind of twists and turns and leaps and bounds that she takes to get through it. And I think it's interesting because it's definitely a trope that you can use for, like, a multi-chapter, like, 100,000 word, like, into this huge, drawn-out, slow burn kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it could also be, like, a short little, like, character study. The one that was recommended and the one that I decided to read today was because it was specifically by our recommender, was just, like, it does have a happy ending. And there's not that much angst, which I don't know how much you can find in the space. So I decided to take that as I could get it, because I was like, I don't think I'm really gonna find this anywhere else, where it's like relatively happy and relatively easy read.
Right.
Where, as you said, that's like,
yeah, not very common.
Mm-hmm. So I decided to get it where I could get it.
Fair enough.
But the fan fiction that I'm reading today is Palm Split with a Flower with a Flame by Laundry Biscuits. It was started November 19th, 2022, and it was finished April 18th, 2023. So it finished a little under a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It only has 4 chapters, and it's around 13,000 words, which also, I think, contributes to not being as painful.
Yeah, probably.
Because you could really stretch out grief, you know?
That you can.
I would like to, before I even get into this, I would like to thank the recommender, Kiki Starfire. I think that was the AO3 tag that this person probably gave us, but thank you so much. I know we don't get to as much recommendations as we'd like to. And if you guys have any like specific tropes, I really love covering tropes and like diving into like tropes where I've done like only one bed at this point. I've done Hanahaki disease. I think I've done one other, but I do like diving into tropes and like where they came from and like, you know, the popularity of them and this and that. So if you have any of those recommendations, send them my way, because I'm always looking for something to cover along with the history of like a trope. So I thank you for that. It is a teen and up rating, and the fandom is Stranger Things, which I know is in a bit of a weird spot, but I personally give grievance to like the fandom, because I know how like difficult sometimes it can be to be in a fandom that's in a terrible, terrible, terrible position. I know that happened with like, obviously Harry Potter is a very big example of that.
Right.
So it was one of those things that it was just like, we will probably never be promoting and covering Stranger Things just because of the place that is at currently, and specifically like the people who are involved in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it only has one season, so it was just like, you know what, if I'm gonna cover it, I'm gonna cover it because someone like gave their four-word heartfelt recommendation for this.
Right.
And I want to respect that, like respect the fans of it rather than like the show, because it's in a little difficult position right now, I think is the easiest way that I could say that, and the kindest way I could say that.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the nicest way to put it.
And yeah, I think I would just like I know that sometimes when people go over, especially when it comes to like fandom and stuff like that. Like, you think you're promoting it. And I kind of don't want to promote the show in the slightest, especially for when one of the main cast members.
Yeah.
Specifically. I mean, I don't really know about any of the others.
Yeah. I know about the one cast member.
Yeah.
Who has controversy around them. Major.
Major. Not little. Major.
Not little. I don't know about the rest of the cast. I honestly don't follow closely with it. Yeah. I was done with the show after the first season. I don't think it needed to continue.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I have my own personal grievances about mm-hmm. the show.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I know. But I always, when it comes to, like, fans of that aspect, especially, like, I've never been put in a position where, like, a thing that I, like, wholeheartedly love, and, like, there are so many things that I, like, wholeheartedly, like, love and I've made my personality and have put so much energy and passion behind it, only for, like, the creator of the thing to be, like, such a monster. Right. I've seen it outwardly, like, as an outsider for certain fandoms, and it's only, like, I mean, I feel sorry, like, and I feel, like, real grief, because it's just, like, what right. do you do in that position where it's, like, I don't support anything that this person is saying, but, like, I still am tied to this world because of nostalgia's sake or because of, like, current passion. Yeah,
I mean, there's a thousand discussions to be had about art versus the artist. Yes. And especially when it comes to larger productions, mm-hmm. it's like, well, it's not the cast's
yeah.
say. It's, you know, the directors and the producers. But then it's also like, oh, the directors and producers are doing nothing about mm-hmm. what this person is saying, and there's no repercussions mm-hmm. for that action. Then it's like, oh, so you're complicit. Oh, yes. So then it's like dominoes keep falling mm-hmm, over each mm-hmm. other.
Yeah, so I can only sympathize. I can't, like, empathize, because, like, yeah, I've never been put in that position, and, like,
right.
I kind of never want to be put in that position, because, like,
right,
yeah. But I just, like, wanted to make it clear that it's, like, this is not a promotional episode. This is more of, like, this is a fan, and, like, you're still gonna be a fan of something, especially if it's, like, and, like, I mean, listen, the ship specifically in Stranger Things that I'm going to be talking about is, like, I don't think, like, a huge surprise. It's one of the most popular ones, especially when the time that this fic was written. Mm. And, like, they were also getting, like, heavy shit on. And it was just, like, man, this just feels like we're just regressing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, as, like, a fandom and fanfiction, like, lover and, like, cosplay lover and fan art lover, it was just, like, it was rough to watch for sure. I don't know. I just, like, part of me, like wants to support as much as I can. The relationship is Steve Harrington and Eddie Munson. It has 18,671 hits, 2,377 kudos, 202 comments, and 570 bookmarks. So the tags are Hanahaki disease, alternate universe, everyone lives, nobody dies, mutual pining, angst with a happy ending, period typical homophobia, and a road trip fic. That is also what got me.
Okay.
I love a road trip story.
I don't know that I've ever read mm-hmm. one specifically tagged mm-hmm. as, like, road trip.
I have read plenty of books that are road trip centric. And I know some people don't like a road trip. I love a road trip. Especially when it's, like, full. Obviously, like, 13,000 word fic is closer to a one shot than, like, a multi-chapter long drawn out kind of thing. But I love a long road trip because, like, you meet so many, like, characters on the road, and you get to go to so many places, and there's so many fucking things that can happen when you're just, like, out in the world on the open road almost. That, like, I don't know. I really love a road trip. And so when I saw it,
it is a very U.S. thing.
Yes.
No other countries really do road trips.
No, but I love a good road trip. I love a road trip story. I don't love a road trip to me. I don't love when I'm a part of a road trip because I don't like sitting in a car for that long.
Mm.
But I like reading about road trips because of all the things that can happen and do happen and the people you meet and the places you visit. I love those. And so when I saw the recommendation, I remember, like, bookmarking it, and that's why I remembered. I was like, there's a Hanahaki one, because I was like, it's also a road trip, and I love a road trip. So Eddie reckons he has about 6 weeks left to live. He'd be able to live longer if he just confessed his feelings, but that's never really going to happen. Just the thought of Steve's face twisting in disgust, confusion, disbelief at Eddie's words makes his guts roil in black tar shame. It's not like he hasn't thought about doing it, of spilling his guts and confessing his feelings. The worst part is that Eddie actually thinks Steve would give in to him. He's a hero with the heart the size of the moon. He probably would make the doomed attempt to love Eddie if only to save one more life. And Eddie just can't put that kind of burden onto him. And Eddie's lived in Indiana long enough that he knows that people talk when this kind of thing happens. It's embarrassing, especially for men. They all make the same shitty jokes about puking pansies, and they all pass around the same shitty rumors. And if he's here any longer, he's just going to become one of those shitty rumors. In Indiana, they require the signed consent of a parent or guardian and a referral from a primary care physician. Plus, it's super fucking expensive to get the cut, since it's technically an elective procedure. How it's an elective procedure when it's life or death to him, Eddie will never know, but it's where he's at currently. So that's why he's loading up his van for one last trip, just planning to drive out and see as much of the country by himself as he can before. Maybe he'll send Wayne a postcard once he's far enough out to give the old man a little closure. He pushes the last of his bags and slams the back of his van shut when he sees exactly the person he didn't want to see leaning up against the side of the van. "You going somewhere, Munson?" says Steve. There's a duffel bag at his feet. "It looks like you're on your way somewhere yourself." "Could be. Depends." And Eddie knows that it's a bad idea. He knows that he should just get in the van and drive away from this mess without another word. But he doesn't. He opens his stupid mouth. "Depends on what?" "Depends on whether my dumbass friend was planning to skip town without telling anyone." "Sounds like a real dick," says Eddie. "And what part of that made you think maybe I should pack a van and stow away with him?" "It's not stowing away if you know that I'm here. Go home, Harrington. I just want to get out of Hawkins for a while." Steve jogs around to the passenger side and slides right in, easy as anything. "Look, man, you know it's not safe to pull this shit like this alone. It's not safe for anyone, but it's 100 times worse for you. I know I'm not your first pick, but I'm the one with the spare time and extra cash, so suck it up." He doesn't want Steve around. Steve is the exact person he's running away from. And now he wants to join him? He should say no, but he's never been all that good at denying Steve anything, especially when he's being pushy. And you know what? Maybe he does want Steve all to himself for just a while. The start of the drive is awkward, at best. With the windows rolled down, there's not much talking or even looking at one another. Eddie pulls over, hops out of the van, and begins to grab as many flowers as he can. Milkweed, joy pyre, black-eyed Susans. Steve is asking a bunch of questions, and there's bugs in the van alongside the litter of flowers along the dash and center console. Eddie does kind of hate them, but if there's a bunch of these real plants around that Steve saw him pick from the earth, then maybe he won't notice the ones that he's coughing up. Which I think is a creative idea that I don't know if I would have ever thought about.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's just like, well, how am I going to hide this from him? Because you can't really.
No.
So it's just like, well, if there's a bunch of flowers around.
Yeah, I just coughed up this petal because it totally got in my throat earlier.
Yeah, I just inhaled the flowers. But I could also think about like getting in a car with someone and they pull over and just start like manhandling flowers out of the ground and like shoving them in the van. And you're like,
okay,
so what's up?
I wouldn't question it. I'd just be like, yep.
I don't think you'd question much, actually.
Yeah.
I think you just, okay. This is what we're doing now.
Hey, man, everyone's got different lifestyles. I don't know. not my problem.
When Eddie starts driving again, Steve tries to start a conversation. "You know, I used to wish I had the bloom. It was so shitty and stupid of me, but I thought, you know, when Nancy broke up with me, I don't know what I thought. I guess I thought she might see how serious I was about her and take me back, like in the movies. Do you still feel that way?" "No. Heartbreak always sucks, but I think I kind of needed it. The whole thing gave me a chance to change course, you know? Like, about what I was doing and who I was with." Eddie wishes that he had the chance to make some change. He won't get to rebuild from the rubble. This won't be a story he gets to tell. He won't get the chance to grow old. I think in the fic, too, I don't mention it in my notes, but they talk about how the bloom is almost a genetic thing, where it's like a single DNA that's changed in a person, that when you do experience these high emotions, something in your like DNA and your body changes for allowing the bloom. And I think when Eddie gets it for the first time, he's almost like, oh, like, it's not gonna happen to me. Like, I've seen plenty of people get heartbroken and it doesn't happen to them. But then of course it happens to him and he's like, well, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I think the bloom, what they talk about in this fic is like, it's very genetic, where like, if your family has had it, you probably will also get it, which is kind of how like genetic diseases work, right? Which I think is very interesting. And I mean, I don't know, because I don't read a ton of Hana Haki fics, but I think that's also an interesting way to phrase Hanahaki disease, about making it like almost a genetic disease.
Yeah, I haven't read many others that have phrased it as such. Mm-hmm. It's usually just like, womp womp, happens to you, get fucked.
So sorry, that sucks. Yeah. You've experienced heartbreak for the first time, let me make it worse. Whoops. They pull over for the night in a field just off the main road. The insects are buzzing loud in the field, and Eddie can hear the faint frog calls from the tree line. He lights a joint and grabs his guitar, beginning a slow pattern. He hams up the vocals just because he know he'll get Steve laughing, eyes bright and fixed on Eddie's antics, and it's everything he's ever wanted. And his throat starts to fill with a familiar choke. He tries to sing around it, but he can barely get out a word before he's coughing, his whole body heaving. "Sorry," he wheezes. "Not a singer. Shouldn't have smoked before." He turns away from Steve as petals fall from his mouth. He doesn't look back when the fit is over, instead choosing to climb back into the van. Steve follows him, saying that they should probably get some sleep since they're setting out early. Eddie doesn't acknowledge him. He's been trying not to think about their sleeping arrangements. Steve shucks off his jeans, but that's it, before lying down on the mattress Eddie laid out in the back of the van for this trip. And Eddie can't contain his laughter at the situation. "Shut up. It's not like I had a ton of time to pack," Steve says. "When I was told you'd canceled all your stupid wizard games, I drove over right away. Figured I had about half an hour before you disappeared off the face of the earth, so I just raced home and grabbed whatever I could in 5 minutes. Steve's quiet for a moment. An owl calls outside, long and hollow. "Why are we on this road trip, Eddie?" "I'm here to get away from you," he thinks. "Freedom," he says instead. "Adventure, the American dream, and all that jazz." There are places, Eddie knows, that specialize in cutting out the bloom for very specific cases, except it's not really the bloom they're trying to cut out. There are places, Eddie knows, that will drag you away and put you in a bed and purposefully bring on the bloom and tell you that the person you love will never love you back. They'll do it again and again until you believe it. And if you start coughing up flowers, they'll cut it out of you and send you home and tell you that you were cured. They do it to people, to kids, who fall in the kind of love that needs curing. And they did it to Wayne. Eddie loves Wayne, but he never thought he'd end up like him. Eddie had foolishly thought he could be different. The odds of him and Wayne having this in common were so, so low that it hadn't even crossed his mind before he started getting a sick feeling in his throat when he thought about Steve Harrington. The first time he'd stared at a single crumpled petal in the sink, he'd known what the aftertaste of fate was like on his tongue. It's like those older stories, the ones about prophecies. Eddie used to love those when he was a kid. He'd read about characters like Oedipus, who tried to outrun their destiny, but could never really win. There's a story to warn you about those stories. It lays everything out, the pointlessness of trying to run, and the way it knows you're going to try anyways. So, he should have known better. Nothing ever really changes. So yeah, that's what I was saying of, like, his uncle had the bloom, and so it's, like, almost a genetic thing. But I think it was also interesting how they incorporated the bloom as almost,
What a weird thing to call it, the bloom.
Yes.
It's very, it does feel very Americanified.
But if we're thinking, what is Stranger Things set in the 70s or the 80s?
80s.
The 80s? That sounds like some shit that they'd call, like, a disease like that in the 80s. But I kind of enjoyed how, especially they were like, oh, it's a love that they think needs to be cured. It almost reminds me of conversion type therapy, where it's like they kind of emotionally abuse these children, where it's like the love you feel is one that needs to be cured almost. Yeah, I don't know. It's not touched on very much in the fic, but I thought that was like very fascinating of like the way that this author like went about it, where it's like, especially in the way that they talked about like the cure, where it's like, oh damn, that's almost like conversion therapy, where they just kind of mutilate you from the inside out and abuse the fuck out of you until they're like, you're fine, go home. But it's like, no, that person's a shell of who they actually were.
That's not okay.
So I found that quite fascinating for someone who's never read Hanahaki disease. And again, I don't know if that's a thing that is normally, especially since Hanahaki diseases are pretty confident a queer thing that people use for a lot of queer fan fiction, especially when it comes to that unrequited. And of course, because AO3 is just riddled with queer fan fiction, so it wouldn't be shocking to put A and B together and get C at the end. But yeah, as not a purveyor of Hanahaki disease, I was like, that's actually very smart of you. I thought that was a very intelligent way to go about that. Out on the road the next day, they run across an old-fashioned frozen custard place outside of Milwaukee. Steve is not happy when Eddie parks the car. Do we have to? Yeah, yeah, we have to. I have the overwhelming need to put some frozen custard in my face immediately, so you're just gonna have to deal with the trauma. Steve gets a frozen custard too, despite all his complaining, and they sit in the back of the van to eat. It's a pretty day out, and Eddie only had to hide a coughing fit once. They pull out of the parking lot in a kind of near-comfortable silence, the radio crackling with some song. He drums on the steering wheel a little, letting the I-43 take up all of his conscious mind for a spell. Eddie takes a deep breath, and it's like his lungs are expanding all the way up to the sky, like he can breathe in the slick blue heavens and the road dust being kicked up in their wake all at once, like the whole sun-baked landscape is flowing through him. They stop for the night in Salt Lake at a motel. The woman behind the desk definitely hates her life, her job. At least she hates today, because she looks deeply unimpressed with two men showing up to the motel after dark. Maybe Steve should have just gone in alone. He could have charmed just about anyone, even a lone motel worker in the middle of nowhere. But Eddie needed to get out of that van and into a shower as quickly as possible. Could we get a room? Two beds, if you got them. And the woman looks them up and down. You boys know where you are, right? Salt Lake City. Steve looks confused. We're just passing through, though. Might be worth passing a little faster. We don't have any vacancies right now. And they glance back at the lit vacancy sign outside. And they make note of the utter lack of cars in the parking lot. The woman explains that her sign is broken, but Eddie isn't buying her shit. Listen, lady, we're just two pals on a little road trip through these great United States trying to get some nature and shit, okay? We just want a couple beds for the night, that's all. Not looking for any trouble. And he sees the instant Steve realizes why she doesn't want to give them a room, because his face looks scandalized and a little mad. And Eddie counts out some cash quickly, stepping between Steve and the woman before he breaks into his hero act. And as soon as they're out of the small lobby and walking towards their room, Steve finally said something. What the hell was that? What the... Eddie! Steve, I'm serious. So am I. Let's just get out of here. And the next morning, they get the fuck out of Utah as quickly as possible and head south towards Red Rock Country. It's nothing like Eddie has ever seen. Gray-green bushes clustered low around the highway, cottonwoods popping up wherever the road gets too close to the river. They stop in the afternoon on the outskirts of Arches to stretch their legs and eat while sitting in the back of the van. It's been pretty bad lately. Eddie's been coughing up flowers and swallowing them right back down whenever Steve is around. It helps for a moment, but they always come right back up, bigger and worse later. He's just had to count the minutes until he's hunched over a filthy gas station toilet in private. The worst of it has been the blood. At first it was just a drop or two, but now there's enough blood to leave streaks on the petals, staining them red. He can't stand the sight of flowers anymore. The ones in his body and the ones littering his van. While they sit in the back, he twists a pale, half-furled blossom off of a nearby prickly pear, taking the flower apart petal by petal. You got a grudge there, man? Steve says. Eddie shrugs. You know, I always wondered if you could, like, plant the stuff people throw up with normal flowers. You think they'd survive? Why on earth would you want to do something like that, Harrington? Well, like, if someone had the bloom and then they told the other person and it all worked out, it might be nice to have, like, some kind of memento, like, living proof that it's true love, don't you think? I think it's selfish, telling someone you bloomed for them. Even if it works out, it's manipulative. You're kind of saying, if you break up with me, I might literally die. So what? People, like, can't ever be in love? Sure, they can be in love. They should just have the fucking decency to perish from it the first time around, save everyone else a lot of time. Is that what you're doing? Saving time? Eddie stops breathing. I don't know how to tell you this, says Steve, but you're not very sneaky. And Eddie's heart and stomach give a violent twist. He doubles over with the force of his coughing, spitting out petals covered in blood and saliva. Well, it's getting worse, Eddie. What was your plan anyways? I'm gonna be honest here. For a while, I thought the girl lived out of state, and that's where we were going. But now, I'm just getting kind of concerned because we're not doing that in the slightest. Steve's rubbing circles on Eddie's back, and Eddie thinks this whole stupid trip was worth it just for this. Just for Steve Harrington to soothe him like this. He focuses on Steve's hand rather than the conversation he was forced to have. He can't figure out a way to say that there was never a girl. He could just stay quiet until Steve figures it out on his own. He seems quite capable enough to do that by now. Shit, Eddie, you can't... This is the rest of your life we're talking about. You know they say the cut doesn't always turn out okay. People can get really messed up on the operating table. Like the rest of their emotions don't work right or something. I'm not gonna get it cut. I'm sorry, what do you mean you're not gonna get the cut? You caught me. This is Eddie Munson's farewell tour. And Eddie sits in the dirt, closing his eyes and tipping his face up to the afternoon sun, letting his breath even out. It feels weirdly good to tell Steve, like, now that he's not the only person in the world who's carrying this specific secret, there's a little more space inside him. Until he looks at Steve, who looks absolutely wrecked. I had a pretty good run. Cheated death a few times already, thanks to some stalwart heroes who I could mention. My time's just up. That's all. Steve turns to throw his arms around Eddie, and he's not prepared for this heavy mass, but even as his back hits the dirt, Steve doesn't let go. Eddie pets his hair a little as he clings to Eddie's jacket, shaking and staring up at the sky. When Steve finally sits up, though, he leaves a hand on Eddie's side, big and warm on his ribcage. Sorry, I didn't mean to have a fucking breakdown on you. It's fine, Harrington. You can get all those big emotions out now. Why did you try to hide it? Why didn't you tell anyone? Well, maybe I was just trying to avoid this exact conversation. Ever think of that? It's just not the kind of thing people talk about. And they sit there long enough that the sun finally sets over the desert. When they turn in for the night, Steve abandons the unspoken rule that they've maintained about distance between them on the mattress in the back of the van, and he pulls Eddie into his chest. And Eddie's surprised, and that's calling it an understatement, but he's not going to push Steve away anytime soon. They feel like the only people in the world, here in the middle of the desert, with nothing but the familiar walls of the van between them and the night. Aren't you scared? Steve says. Of death? Yeah, of course I'm fucking scared, Steve, but I'm more scared about being selfish, I guess. I don't want to be the kind of guy who screws up a whole bunch of lives for no reason. Just because I get scared? I'm no hero, but I'm not fixing to become a villain either. Screw up lives? What are you talking about? You know, once you know something like that, you can't stop knowing. Even if no one else does. If you knew someone died because you couldn't help not being in love with them, you don't think that'd fuck you up forever? When Eddie was a kid, Wayne sat him down and told him that you can't force people to like you. That it's not the right way to go about it. Wayne had paused, something flickering in his eyes that Eddie wouldn't understand for years and years before saying, love will come to you. You just gotta let it. And don't go trying to strong-arm the issue. It's gotta be worth taking the chance, though, Steve says. I just don't get it, like, why this girl's feelings are more important than your life. It's not like that. Then tell me what it's like, because that's what it sounds like to me. It's not, okay? You don't even know who it is, man. I don't care who she is. She's not worth it. Yes, he is. Eddie sits up, creating space between him and Steve before he decides it's too weird and pushes him away first. Oh, Steve says at last. Shit. I can drop you off at the Amtrak station in the morning, Eddie says. He's for sure not driving all the way back to Hawkins. He's never going back to that town ever again. Why? You don't have to do it. I'm cool. It's cool. I mean, we're cool. Eddie laughs, sour relief slicing through him. Okay, if you're sure we're, what was it again? Cool. Yeah, totally. Totally cool. And Eddie's pretty sure he doesn't believe that, but he doesn't have the energy to force Steve to admit anything else. After a second, he just nods and lies back down, reinforcing the silent rule of distance they had before once again. The silence feels heavy. Steve doesn't try to hold him again. Eddie doesn't know what to expect the next morning, but it's definitely not Steve wanting to hike some of the Canyonland trails the first thing in the morning. Eddie agrees, even though he doesn't have hiking boots, has never been hiking before, and has never thought of himself as someone who would ever go hiking in his life. But he's not all that inclined to say no to Steve. To his relief, it's more of a stroll than a hike. And actually, he's having a pretty good time. It takes them maybe an hour to get to the overlook, finally witnessing the red, purple, gold rock layers laid bare by ancient winds and water. So, Steve says as he walks up behind Eddie, is it just this guy, or has it always been guys? Always guys. It's why I moved to Hawkins. I don't get it. Yeah, you do. Oh, that's... Sorry. They stand there for a while longer, somehow, staring out over a landscape this big, realizing how large the world actually is compared to their small lives in Hawkins. It makes Eddie's problems feel a little smaller. Is it... Steve looks painful, trying to find a place for his words. Is that why you're not telling him? Because it's a guy? Kinda. Listen, I know how this is gonna sound, but you should tell him anyways. I know there's, like, risks and stuff, but it's gotta be worth it, right? I mean, this is literally life and death, man. And hey, I'll come along and beat him up if he's not, like, if he's, like, an asshole, okay? A wave of impossible fondness rises in Eddie, bringing up a bouquet of roses with it. And Eddie's just glad that he doesn't have to try to hide it from Steve now. As they walk back to the van to head south on US 19, Steve holds out his hand. Maybe I should drive for a while. You know where we're going? Do you? Eddie shrugs. Yeah, okay, you got me. I wanted to see a little more of the country, maybe, you know? Head out to the coast. You know, I've never seen the ocean. Sure, I can do that. Let's go see the ocean. The trip runs like this now. Steve asking lots of questions, ranging from who is this mystery man to why wouldn't you tell him your feelings, and Eddie refusing to answer every question thrown his way. They swing through Las Vegas, which they both hate, but Eddie also secretly likes. They drive through Death Valley. It's at least 100 degrees out in the sun, and the van's not much better. They pull over, climbing out and stretching their bodies. There's no one around for miles. Not even another car passes them. You're still not going to tell me who the guy is? Steve asks for the millionth time. Doesn't matter. It won't make a difference. Can you at least tell me where he lives? Is he in Hawkins? He's around somewhere. It was different when he was 17 and desperate, not knowing exactly what he wanted, still hoping that what he wanted would go away without him ever having to look it in the face. Looking back, he knows he was putting himself in danger, but he couldn't stop himself. It had been so, so far from anything he's seen in movies and television, catching someone's eye across a bar and feeling a connection to someone without ever sharing a word. But his life in Hawkins has been Hawkins. Can you tell me about the guy? What he's like? Why you like him, I guess? At first, Eddie wants to deny him, like he's been doing, but he finds he can't resist the chance to tell Steve the truth right under his nose. He's something else. He's really... He cares, you know? Like, that's the most important thing about him, caring about people. Even if it hurts, even if it's frustrating as shit, he's always gonna do the right thing. I didn't think that kind of caring was real before I met him. He's kind of stubborn, I guess. Doesn't give up on people even when he should. Loyal, sweet, but like, fucking fascinating, you know? Got all these layers to him. I swear he's the weirdest, most interesting guy I've ever met. Never come across anyone like him in my entire life. Steve's quiet for a long moment. Jesus, he says at last. You love this guy, huh? I guess I really do. And you're really sure he wouldn't go for it? He's straight. It is what it is. Yeah, but still, you never know. Steve probably has no idea what he's saying, but Eddie's dumb heart is in his throat. Delusional little tendril singing, what if? Thanks, I guess, but you know, thinking about it's not gonna do the trick. Well, are you sure you can't get over to him? I mean, honestly, I can't picture this guy who's, I don't know, badass enough for you to be blooming in bloom. It sounds almost nice that way, like a blush and a springtime smile, not like hunching over and hacking up a weed in the morning light. Not like the physical manifestation of unwantedness forcing its way up his esophagus. Eddie stares out over the bleached ground, the salt ridges, and thinks, this love is killing me. By the time they reach Sequoia National Forest, Eddie's got a plastic bag permanently sitting in his lap to catch the flowers and weeds. He's coughing up more and more frequently. His stomach and throat hurt all the time now. He might have 3 weeks at most. It's also been a few days since he's picked up his guitar. There's been a growing fear in the back of his mind that if he leaves it too long, before he knows it, it'll be the last time he plays. He strums a little. He focuses on the strings, his fingers, the words he's singing quietly. When he looks up, he sees a small smile on Steve's face. Eddie tries to smile back, but he has to catch himself as flowers fill his throat, suddenly and violently. He shakes and coughs for an eternity. Steve rubs his back, like always. There's a lot of stems and leaves in that one, huh? Eddie nods, spitting out the last of it and setting his guitar down before slumping back against the van. How long do you think? Steve asks, not finishing the question. No clue. It's getting bad. You really aren't going to tell this guy, are you? Not if I can help it. Well, can you at least think about getting the cut? Not in the cards for me. Why the fuck not? Can you at least tell me that? Because it's expensive, Steve, and I don't have any kind of doctor's note or any of the shit that you need. It's money? That's the reason you're not getting the cut? Jesus, I've been trying to respect your wishes, but if it's money, then why the fuck didn't you ask me? This isn't like spotting someone $20, Steve. We're talking about the kind of money that wrecks lives. It's not the kind of money you ask for. Me and Wayne could sell everything we own, and it wouldn't cover it. I'm not going to put him in debt just because I can't control my damn feelings. Steve starts pacing back and forth. If you don't want to tell the guy, I guess... I mean, I think you're wrong, but I get it. But don't fucking die because you got some bug up your ass about letting people help you. We can drive to Washington. It doesn't need any kind of doctor referral, and don't worry about the goddamn money, okay? I'll sell the car, I'll clean up my dad's bank account. I don't fucking care. I hauled your unconscious body nearly 4 goddamn miles through the upside down on my back. You think there's any amount of money of stuff that I wouldn't fucking give to keep you alive? Steve, God, you shouldn't. And then he stops his sentence. They could just go round and round forever at this rate. And Eddie knows, he knows, there's only one way out of this. Part of him probably always knew that they were going to end up here. From the moment he saw Steve leaning up against the van. And he might be a coward. He still thinks this is about as selfish as he's ever been. Fuck. He doesn't want to die. You know what? Yeah. Fuck it. Sure. You can pay for the goddamn cut if you want. But you gotta let me say something first. And the only reason I'm ever telling you this is because you'll figure it out anyways if I take your money, okay? You'll figure it out because it's you. That's my big secret. You have unlocked the mystery of Eddie fucking Munson. Congratulations. But hey, look on the bright side. You now have the power to make me forget every single thing about you. And you could just tell me to stay the hell away from you afterwards. Steve's jaw is actually hanging open when Eddie finishes his verbal assault. He wishes that he'd had the patience to ease Steve into things more gently. But honestly, Steve wasn't helping with the pushing and the questioning and the questioning and the pestering. Don't screw with me, man. You can't just joke about this. You don't have to tell me who it is, but don't do this. It's not fair. What's not fair is making a dying man explain himself twice. Leave me whatever meager scraps of dignity I've still got. Fucking Christ. And Eddie can't look at Steve anymore. This is really, truly unbearable. He might die right here. Until Steve unfolds and reaches out to grab Eddie's arms, shaking a little. God, you're a fucking idiot. Holy shit, why the fuck do you think I'm here? I quit my job without notice just to follow you around? I had to force you to let me to come along like I'm the world's most pathetic groupie. I'm obsessed with you. How are you not getting this? Eddie actually thinks he might be dead. That Sequoia National Forest doesn't actually exist, and this is heaven. But Steve keeps going. Do you know how pissed off I was when I was thinking about the guy, the one that I thought that you were in love with? Even when I thought it was a girl, I just wanted to know who the hell would be that dumb enough to not love you back. Eddie's heart is a riot of color. I don't want to fuck it up. I'm not going to. Eddie, God, just... Steve searches his face for a moment before leaning in. He kisses Eddie like nothing else in the goddamn world matters, even a little bit. Kissing him deep with a kind of hunger that makes Eddie's knees want to give out. Makes Eddie's hands curl into Steve's shirt and hang on for dear life. He smells like long days on the road and tastes like warm Gatorade, and Eddie wants to drown in him. "Don't get the cut," Steve whispers. "Come back to Hawkins with me." "Yeah, yeah, I can do that." Eddie's laughing helplessly, euphorically. "But first, I want to see the ocean with you." They're standing in the surf, and Steve has his arms wrapped around Eddie, resting his head on Eddie's shoulder. It's a public beach, but there's nobody around, and they're in a little cove tucked away out of sight from the main stretch. "Doesn't it, I don't know, scare you?" Eddie asks. "What are you talking about?" Steve mumbles. "I'm a ticking time bomb." Sometimes he thinks he's a monster. A jealous dragon in a lair, hoarding all of Steve's affection from the daylight. Or maybe it's more like a parasite. A lacy weave of hellbind clinging to Steve for survival. He tries not to let it get to him too much. "I mean," Steve rubs slow circles into Eddie's side through his t-shirt. "It only matters if we break up, right? Like, if I break up with you? I guess I don't really think about it like that. It's not like it's ever going to happen, so what's the point?" Eddie puts his hand over Steve's, glancing down at how their fingers slot together. Sure, being with some other guy might be simpler, but he can't even picture feeling anything for anyone else to spit up petals for. It's so improbable that they've wound up in this place together. Eddie still thinks he's dreaming, that he actually still might be dead. It takes his breath away. The air tastes like salt here. He sent a postcard to Wayne after all, from the little town they're staying in. It's not the postcard he thought he was going to send, but he was happy to send it all the same. He'll be in for a hell of a lecture when he gets back, but he thinks he'll be happy for him once he burns through all the worry he's been building up. If anyone can understand how much of a goddamn miracle it is that Eddie's actually survived blooming for Steve fucking Harrington, Wayne can. "Hey, Steve," says Eddie. "Been meaning to ask, when did you, know that you had feelings for me, I guess?" "Shit, okay. Don't judge me too much, okay? It was when you said it was me you were in love with. Just, you said that. And my first thought was that it didn't make any sense. Because the blue moment only happens when you love somebody but they don't love you back, and... yeah. It's a pretty tight turning circle, Stevie. It wasn't like I didn't, you know, have feelings before that. I didn't know they were there. I'm kind of an idiot, and you know that." Eddie turns his head for a kiss. "You keep saying that shit about my boyfriend, and I'm gonna have to fight you. You love me." Steve sounds smug and thrilled. He says that a lot, too. Sometimes for no goddamn reason. "Yeah, I do." He's always got his hands on Eddie like he can't help himself. Maybe it'll get annoying down the line, but fuck knows what they're going to do when they get back to Hawkins. But right now, it feels more or less perfect. When he's with Steve, it's pretty hard to remember the taste of flowers. The tide's gone out. Somewhere miles and miles off, the hidden moon is calling the salt water to rush away from their patch of coastline. They're standing deep enough that Eddie almost stumbles with the force of it, bare toes sliding across the soft, rolling sand as the water surges past his calves. But Steve's got his tight arms around him, and he always will. And that was Palms Split with the Flower with the Flame by Laundry Biscuits. My perfect little happy ending for the hot hockey disease, because I don't think I could take anything else.
It doesn't happen very often.
I believe you, and I'm just going to take what I can get. What you were saying in the beginning, I didn't want to mention until we got closer to the end, when you were just like, yeah, or maybe the other person realizes too late, and it's like, that probably is what would have happened in this fic if the author wasn't like, happy ever after, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
Because it's like, yeah, I didn't even realize it or what I was doing until you mentioned it. And it was like, oh, yeah.
But I think when it's like, oh, they realize too late, it's worse when it's like person A tells person B, mm-hmm. and person B goes, well, no. I don't love you.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, uh-huh. but like, I just don't have those feelings. And then later, oh, I do. I shouldn't have said that. Whoops.
Even the idea of that hurts so much that I'm just like, why? Like, we've been doing this for so long and I still have yet to wrap my brain around, like, why?
Pain.
Because it's like,
I love it. It's so good.
Even if this was a angst with a happy ending, if it was like drawn out and like that sort of pain, where it is like the, oh, he's confessed his feelings and he's like, sorry, I don't feel that way for you. And then like, even if there's a moment where he's like running back and he's like, I actually do love you. And like that kind of thing, like something like that would break me from the inside out of like, actually, I don't love you.
My favorite thing with Hanahaki stuff is like, oh, person A is like friends with person B and they're like talking, and then person B brings up like they're currently in a relationship or they have a crush. Yeah. And then person A just starts coughing.
Just
yeah, it's my favorite bit. It happens so like, in every fic without that. Fail.
Damn.
It's so funny. Because it's usually that's like the clue mm-hmm. that tells person B something's going on.
Yeah.
But it's also just usually like the youch.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed that he was smart enough to put it together where he was like, nah, you're not very, I can see that you're spitting up flowers.
Yeah.
You could put as many flowers
it's
in this
not
card.
A hard thing to be like, oh, there's blood on that petal.
Huh. That petal's different than the other flowers that you picked up. Even you put out a lot of flowers, but nothing like
yeah.
Yeah. So I also appreciated that because it is one of a major hatred of mine of when a character is just stupid for the sake of the plot, where it's like, what do you mean they wouldn't pick up on this? I'm so confused. They're just stupid for stupid's sake, and so I enjoyed that it was just like, come on, man. You think that I didn't know something was up when you, like, quit your job and, like, canceled all your D&D sessions for the summer and, yeah. like, packing up your shit? Like, do you think...
You think I'm dumb?
Yeah. I think I know the answer to this question for you, but what would you do if you were in a position where you had unrequited feelings or, like, you had a Hanahaki disease where, like, you hadn't told someone your feelings?
I don't know. I'm the type of person that, like, if things build up long enough, I just kind of, like, mm-hmm. get to the point, and I'm like, okay, here's the facts. Here's mm-hmm. the situation. So I feel like it would get down to a point where, like, I would tell the other person, mm-hmm. and then based off of that,
right.
it's like, okay, well,
right.
I would most likely get the surgery if they said no, right. if things didn't work
you
out.
You wouldn't just die?
No.
Yeah. You'd have to be in quite a position to be like, death is... better than...
No, the thing is, if I wasn't the type of person to, like, actively engage and, like, confront mm-hmm. people about things, I think I would just die.
That... Oh, okay.
Like, I think I would just take the route completely and just, like, die
yeah.
instead of telling anyone. Mm-hmm. But, again, I am... Once it gets to a certain point, to a right. certain boiling point, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to this person. I'm telling them right now.
That's what I thought, where I was like, I think I know your answer. And I think I knew. Yeah. I was just like, I know what kind of person I is. I think I would just not... tell anyone and just get the surgery alone and like deal, because I feel like I'm a person who's just like, I'm gonna just deal with it. I'll just deal with it on my own and like that's fine.
I definitely, when I first started reading Hanahaki, mm-hmm. that was like kind of my go-to.
That was your inclination of like, yeah, I think
that's what I would do. Yeah. But over time, especially since I went from high school to now college, almost graduating yeah. college, it's I'm a different person and mm-hmm. it's just like,
you've grown, you've flowered
in some ways. But yeah, it would be like a, hey, I have this disease, and I'm not saying it's because of you or anything necessarily, right. but like, I do have feelings for you. If yeah. you don't, it's fine. Like,
would you even bring up, like, I have a disease, or would you just say, like, I have feelings for you?
I mean, I think it would depend on, like, how closely
right.
interpersonal relationship-wise mm-hmm. I am with this person. Because if it is like, oh, this person's, like, a really close friend, again, it's like, that's a hard thing to hide. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like they would be clued in, and it'd be like, you can put the pieces together.
Right.
But if it wasn't, I would just be like, oh, I have feelings for you. Right. This is kind of it. I just wanted to let you know.
I feel like that was part of Eddie's thing. It was just like, oh, it's really selfish because then it's like, you have to date me or I'll die. And it's like, well, you don't necessarily have to tell them that you're dying. Like, you, or that you have right. this disease. You're just like, I have feelings for you.
I think, yeah. I think that's also, like, part of the author's conception of what Hanahaki sure. is. Yeah. Because it is, like, in some of the ones that I've read, it's just like, oh, it's your misconception that you think that they don't love you, mm-hmm. therefore you're inflicting harm on yourself. Yes. And then in other ones, it's like, oh no, this person genuinely doesn't love you, so you have this.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's yeah. dependent on that factor as well.
Yeah, but I definitely think that I am the type of person who, like, I deal with things on such a solitary level that's like, sometimes I don't even go to my parents with some things, and then they'll get mad that, like, why didn't you ask anybody for help? And I'm right. like, oh, whoops. That, like, I feel like I would, and, like, yeah, depending on if, like, I needed money, because, again, I don't think my parents would let me die. I think they would give me money for, like, a surgery to, like, help me survive. But, like, unless I can, like, be like, oh, I can afford this on my own, you know, in whatever means or whatever.
Right.
I would just do it alone. especially, like, yeah, there's tons of things I've dealt with medically that I've just dealt with alone and haven't told anyone about.
No, that's fair.
And so I feel like it would just be like, oh, Sydney's out for, like, a week or however long it is, and then, like, I'm fine. I'm just never gonna tell anybody, and I'm gonna die with that secret, actually.
Yikes.
Yeah. But I think Haunted Hockey is very fascinating. I love a trope that just comes out of nowhere and just keeps snowballing.
I like the body horror aspect of it. Really? Yeah, I really do. And, like, I love horror girly. I love it.
But I feel
love...
like you're not, you've never, like, all your favorite films are, like, not body gore-esque.
No, but I do like the imagery.
Okay.
I do like the imagery and, like,
bloody petals.
Yeah, and... because I've read somewhere it's like, oh, they physically pull, like, roots out of their throat.
Ooh.
Because it's a lot of the fics that I've read too, it's like, oh, it's blooming in their lungs, so they have to physically, like, pull it out.
Ooh, that's crazy.
Yeah. I like that. Again, if someone made a movie, I wouldn't physically be able to, like, watch it, right. But I do like the imagery and the thought of,
well,
like,
they're just words, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
of, like,
crazy.
Oh my god, you're pulling, like, this branch of flowers out of your mouth. And especially, I've seen people go the roses route, and it's like, oh, there's thorns on it, because it's,
ooh,
they're flowers.
Yeah. Getting an x-ray and seeing just, like, a jungle in, yeah, like, your lungs, and it's, yeah, like, oh, man. That makes it more like when I was talking about in the beginning about, like, how it's kind of maybe taken from, like, viral infections. When, like, that, you're like,
yeah,
that's, like, not a crazy, like,
no, and it, yeah, again, it depends on, like, the spectrum people are willing to go, because a lot of it is just like they cough up flower petals,
and then some people are just
like it's a full-on bush, like, you have to, like, get it out, and it's like, I respect that.
Yeah,
like, we're going to the extreme.
They're like, we have not pulled any punches here in the slightest. Yeah, I don't know, I feel like I'm not a huge baby with, like, body horror.
Since I've been getting older, mm-hmm, it's visually seeing it affects me more,
sure,
but I still like the imagery and the idea,
yeah,
of it. I was able to handle this kind of stuff way better when I was a high schooler, but I was also, I don't know, it was like my retaliation phase,
yeah,
where I was like coming out of Mormonism, mm-hmm, so just kind of consuming everything. Yeah, because even... I was talking to some friends about, like, analog horror stuff, and we were talking,
yeah,
about, like, what bothers us, mm-hmm, and what makes us freak out. And it's one of those things that, like, if I have other people physically around, mm-hmm, I'm not as affected by horror.
Sure.
But when it's just me by myself, horror does indescribable things to my,
right,
mental health. So.
That's fair. I mean, I think the body gore aspect, I would be able to, like, if it was a horror fic, I think... what fucks me up is the emotions behind it, and, like, you're not only dealing with this thing where it's, like, fucking you up from the inside out, but it's also fucking you up mentally,
right?
And I'm like, that's what makes me feel icky. Not like the body horror of, like, pulling branches out and thorns ripping,
right,
up your throat and stuff like that. I could do that. Some of my favorite, like, I love the, I think, what is it, 2012 Evil Dead remake, and that's like terribly like,
I have not seen it, we've talked about it,
they don't pull any fucking,
yeah,
punches in that movie. I mean, even the second Evil Dead 2, like, obviously it's body gore for the time it was released in. Martyrs is also a crazy one that I can sit through. Like, I can pretty much sit through, like, body gore, like, people getting fucked up,
yeah,
in that situation, but it's the emotions that really mess me up mentally, the part that I'm like, if this was regular horror, I'd be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but the fact that it's tied to unrequited love and, you know, someone being like, I don't feel that way for you, and then having to do that shit is like, great, what do we have to deal with now?
Yeah.
Okay, we're just stacking on trauma after trauma at this point. But I don't think it was interesting to dive into it in the shallow end of the pool. I don't know if I'd ever be able to do a full dive.
Yeah, it's not really your...
No.
Your wheelhouse.
But,
and I don't blame you.
Yeah, it was nice to do a little, like, tip, a little toe dip. It'd be like,
oop. I mean, it ended fine, so it wasn't...
No, I know, that's why.
Yeah,
I was fine
with,
like, it.
Whatever.
I really appreciate the recommender who was just like, it ends fine. It is a happy ending. And I'm like, you knew exactly what,
yeah,
I needed.
Whereas, like, I still have to read a bunch of stuff.
It's gonna break me.